Scripture reading for today is taken from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 17, and verses 11 to 19. On the way to Jerusalem, Jesus was going through the region between Samaria and Galilee. As he entered a village, 10 lepers approached him. Keeping their distance, they called out, saying, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." When he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." And as they went, they were made clean. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. He prostrated himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus asked, "Were not 10 made clean? But the other 9, where are they? Was none of them found to return and give praise to God, except this foreigner?" Then he said to him, "Get up and go on your way. Your faith has made you well." May God bless this portion of his word this morning.
Good morning. So indeed, Thanksgiving, we had our own little bounty in the backyard. Rob and I were just talking about the way in which we had so many tomatoes this summer, which was great. But the amazing thing was, Rob grows Swiss chard too. I love Swiss chard, but apparently sort of the birds. And this year we have in the back, it's like little bushes that are sort of lacy leaves, more like doilies just waving in the wind. So I remember my mom would, she and San in their backyard had raspberries, and mom would always count her blessings, literally count her blessings. Every day, every week, she would tally up how many pints that were picked that day. It was great memories. So, the 10 lepers. Alan, can I have your Bible?
Yes, sir.
So I confess, when I was first looking at this passage, and I was led to it by, following the lectionary. This is the reading for today, for Thanksgiving. But the 10 lepers, I read this story, and I wanted more to the story, because the story sort of read flat to me. I looked at it and I said, so Jesus heals, there are 10 lepers standing at a distance. They call to him and they say, "Jesus, help, Master, help us, make us clean." And he does. He sees them and he makes them clean. And he says, "Go and present yourselves to the priest," because that's what had to happen in order for them to get their discharge papers from the hospital, if you will. If they go to and present themselves to the priest and they're clean, then that's the end of it. But the one comes back, and he falls at Jesus' feet and makes, you know, kind of a spectacle. Now, perhaps the struggle that I'm having, and again, I do confess this, but it's because as a grandma, my daughters are grown, but now I'm watching grandkids learn manners. And so the first way I'm reading this story is that the 9 leave and forget to say thank you. And the one comes back and says, "Thank you," and that makes him the hero of the story. But we know that's not what it is. Jesus doesn't work like that. Jesus' stories always instruct. They're not sarcastic, and they don't humiliate people for that purpose. So I'm reading it, and I'm reading it, and I'm really struggling. I was looking into even the idea of lepers. Now, leprosy is something I'm fairly sure that no one in our company here has ever struggled with leprosy, and it's not even something you hear about anymore. And if anything, it's more the stigma of leprosy than the actual danger of the disease itself. It can be healed. But still very much alive is the idea of being a leper. That's still an expression that people use. I feel like a leper. And instantly, when someone says, "I feel like a leper," I know what they're talking about, and I know how they feel. Just a little bit of information. So, Rob, I'm telling a story about home. I hope this is okay. So we've had a struggle this summer with rats, and we're almost to the end of it. But I'll tell you, you feel kind of like a leper. I've had people saying to me, I know what you mean. We have mice. And I'm like, no, mice is nothing like rats. Rats are like, ew. No one ever says, you dirty mouse, you killed my brother. You know, a rat is a rat. But yet I found it's something that I, you know, here I am confessing it to you because you are my family. But it's not something that I talk about that easily because it's just, it's been horrible. We're almost to the end of it, but my goodness, it's been a struggle. It's been a real struggle. So it's not a question of lack of manners. So it appears to be a rhetorical question, not a sarcastic one. And if it's a real and a rhetorical question, who was Jesus really talking to? Because Jesus says, so the Samaritan is at his feet, and Jesus is saying, weren't there nine? Where are they? Didn't they come back too? So he's not talking to the one that came back, and he's not talking to the nine because the nine are off hightailing it to the priest to be able to resume their old lives. I mean, to get the most meat out of a story, you really do try and live in the story long enough to sort of think what each character is experiencing. So I think about the nine. I mean, I can so easily imagine myself as one of the nine. You know, you've been an outcast. You've been in this little group, and you've seen Jesus. You know that miracles are associated with him, and you say, Jesus, Master, make us well. He does it, and you don't know it immediately. Probably it says that as they are walking, it happens. So he says, go and present yourself to the priest. You're walking together, and imagine there's 10 of them and they're walking, and what are they really thinking? I mean, do they kind of trust it fully? Do they wonder? Is it immediately? Are they checking to see if the others around them? Another thing that makes this story a little bit personal for me, I have shared with some of you before, I've been struggling with a numbness and a tingling in my feet. It turns out after many hilarious doctor's appointments that what I have is peripheral neuropathy, but it's not diabetes related, it's something to do with B12. But the net result is it's kind of on my mind sometimes when I'm, like, not all the time, but sometimes if I'm walking or I'll be reminded of it. And so it's always just kind of sitting back there. So there are these guys that are walking. They're on their way to the priest. They're feeling themselves. And what did that feel like? You know, to have been living with, to be living as an outcast for all that time, and now they're making their way to the priest. I mean, were they skipping? Were they joyful? Were they just so full, just propelled by the dreams of rejoining? Because they wouldn't have been able to be with their families. They would have had to live outside. They would be able to, like, they couldn't come to church. So then the first Sunday when they're able to come to church, like, what an experience it would be, like someone who gets out of the hospital or at the end of a long illness. And then the one who comes back to Jesus, now, he comes back to Jesus, and we don't really know more than just that he comes back, that he's full of gratitude, and he throws himself at Jesus' feet, praising God for what's happened. And so and that's what triggers Jesus to say, where are the other nine? So at one point, the 10 of them were in a group for a little while, and they probably had friendships and all the rest of it. Did the Samaritan leave easily? Did he wonder? Did he say, I'll be right back, catch you in a minute? Like, what did he just, was he so possessed by the spirit of gratitude that he just returned to Jesus? The longer I was looking at this, the more I was seeing that the heart underneath it is much harder to see than, it's really not a question of saying thank you. That's really, we sort of think of gratitude as like that. We think of it as kind of transactional. I give we give Sari and Marcus a gift and they say thank you. But that's not really what all this was about. And that is why it is powerful, everyone, because it's not just about I give you this and you say thanks. Like when you pay for something and you get a receipt for it, it's not a transaction. That's not what this is about. That's not what Jesus sees in the Samaritan. That's not it. So what is it that he sees? I've been reading a couple of Christian contemplatives. One of them is Ronald Rollheiser that my sister introduced me to, and the other one is Richard Rohr. Richard Rohr was talking specifically about this story with the lepers. And he made an interesting observation. It stung a little bit, but here it goes. So he's saying that 1 in 10, he figures, is actually a pretty accurate calculation for this. So he says that the Samaritan did not become grateful at the point of his healing. He was always grateful. And that the 9 weren't ingrateful as a result of the healing, but they just were ingrateful in that sense. And he says that's pretty much it for all of us. He says, you know, it's not something we like to admit, but gratitude is not necessarily the thing that comes most naturally to us. I could think of the story. There are a couple of stories that give me pause. One in particular, the story of Mary and Martha. And, you know, whenever I read that story, I have to read it twice or three times because I read the story and I can almost feel Martha's apron strings tied behind my back because Jesus is saying that Mary is doing the good thing, that she has chosen the good way. And I'm like, yeah, but Jesus, you're probably going to eat the sandwiches too. Like, come on, shouldn't everybody pitch in? But, of course, that's not really the point of the story. But it always takes me a couple of times reading it that way. Maybe I'm alone in that, but that's a thing for me. Another one is the laborers in the vineyard. So people show up for work, and regardless of what time they show up for work, they get paid the same amount. And, you know, that one is far enough removed for me. I can kind of rankle a little bit, but it isn't like it personally touches me like Martha's apron strings do. So I can read that one, and I can see the sense of it a little bit quicker. So I don't want to admit it, but, you know, I'm a pretty grateful person. I'm a pretty grateful person, but I know that if I see traffic is the worst. Traffic is the worst. So if you have a thankful heart, you're not paying attention to the person who comes alongside you on your right and notices that all of a sudden the lane is ended and now they want to go in front of you. So the gracious thing to do, and I have a brother-in-law who lives in Florida who is, he drives like he could have his whole entire car plastered in the Christian fish because he's such a good witness every time he takes the wheel. He lets everybody in. He never honks at anybody. He's just a very gracious driver. I'm gracious kind of to a point, but then like I can sort of feel it welling up in me a little bit. So like, you know, 1 in 10, we like to think that it's not like great odds, right? I mean, the chances are. So his point, Rohr's point, is that for all of us, likely 90% of us are going to be like the lepers who are not necessarily so much ungrateful, but they're thinking about like do what the guy said, the guy that healed me, and go and get it taken care of, like get it all certified and on paper and woohoo, like don't mess around with it. It's not necessarily that they have not disobeyed Jesus. That's the point. They did not disobey him. But what's different about the Samaritan? So then I was thinking about the other story earlier in Luke, and it's actually in the other Gospels as well. The woman who takes a jar of perfume and bathes Jesus' feet, basically, in it. And her tears are washing his feet, and she's wiping it with her hair. And you know, that's one of those stories that when you read it and when you really think about what that scene looked like, a beautiful demonstration of love, but like probably a huge embarrassment to everyone else that was watching on. And yet, that was the very act which gave Jesus kind of the trigger, or he goes into the story talking to Simon about those that are forgiven much have much love, and those who have been forgiven little have very little love. This woman, by her embarrassing, extravagant action, gives Jesus his story, just like this Samaritan. Another thing that I thought about this Samaritan who throws himself at his feet, who is Jesus talking to? Likely it's the people that are standing around watching that have witnessed all this. And what he says to the Samaritan is, your faith has made you well. Your faith. And think about all that we know from different times when we hear stories about Samaritans. Samaritans are Jews, but outsiders who don't quite practice the right way. You know, if in some denominations that are a little bit jealous with their tradition, and they'll say, like Dave jokes about that all the time, we are Baptists and we're doing it right. Other churches do it a different way, and well, it's okay, it's not really wrong, but this is the best way how we do it here. But here Jesus is affirming the Samaritan, your faith. So as everyone is looking on, your faith has made you well. He says almost identical words to the woman, to the sinner who came to Jesus not knowing really what was going to happen. So thinking about all those things, and then because of some reading that I was doing, this Rollheiser that my sister was telling me about, and I read a book of his called The Shattered Lantern, which he wrote addressing, if any of you are old enough in this room maybe, and remember Friedrich Nietzsche, who made that famous statement, God is dead. And of course, what Nietzsche was saying, he was a German philosopher, and he was mostly an atheist. What he was saying was not so much that God is dead, but the idea of God is dead. So reading Rollheiser, and what he's talking about in there, he talks about the contemplative personality and the non-contemplative personality, more to the point, which is what's happening in our time. He's saying basically, not to any individual here, but he's saying to us, to the time that he's speaking to, that we live without wonder. We have things figured out. We don't really respect what we can't touch and feel and taste and put our finger on and document and, you know, prove with science. So we don't wonder. We don't have the wonder about us anymore. And the one thing that I think that the Samaritan woman who puts herself at Jesus' feet, and to the Samaritan who is healed of the leprosy, and you can almost picture it like a baseball player sliding into home plate, like just coming back and just prostrate, just putting himself down at Jesus' feet, loving Jesus. Wonder. It's wonder. It's not a thank you. It's not a super duper thank you. It's not a, gosh, how can I ever pay you back? Like, I'll, man, way to go, and I'll write a blog about it. It's none of those. It's not that. It is being so moved in their hearts with what we'll call gratitude, but it's a different kind of gratitude than we really usually think about or let happen in our lives. It's that takes them to the place of they don't care what it looks like. They're not even probably aware of the people around them. They just love Jesus, and they put themselves at his feet. So thinking about Rollheiser, and it's a beautiful book. I highly recommend it, and I actually have two copies if anyone wants to borrow one. He talks about this thing about wonder, and how do we recover the wonder? How do we open ourselves so that we can make room for that experience of God in our lives? How do we do that? It's just an amazing thing. And then a thing that I thought even further about it was, it's not just the experience of wonder, but it's the It's the actual experience of God. It's the experience of God. Not the talk about God, not the idea about God, not the intention to be with God, but just saying, God, it's you and me. It's opening ourselves up to that. One of the things that he cites is, there was an article, and of course, this is something I loved. Back in the late, the latter part of the last century, Time magazine ran an article basically citing the fact that today, time is the most precious commodity in our lives. We live at a pace. We're rushing. We're always rushing. We're hurrying. We are multitasking. And of course, you don't ever really multitask, but we are covering a bunch of bases. We're in a hurry. We're no wonder we might have a tendency to be like the nine who are just getting the job done. I got healed. Now I'm going to go. Now I'm going to be made. I'm going to be known to be made well so that I can just get back to life as I knew it before. But it's all contained in their own life. It's not touching other people. And most importantly, it does not recognize where the healing came from, and more importantly, where the love came from. Jesus is love. God is love. Jesus' lessons, hard as they are, sometimes to understand, but sometimes just it takes a while to unpack them. But they are never, strictly speaking, they are never moral lessons. They are never lessons that take something away from one person or make one person. They're always to teach, but they're all at their core. What they are is love stories. They're all love stories. And we're invited. We are invited to be a part of that, to enter into that love story. And it begins with the gratitude thing. In the old days, when Christy and I were at Frontlines together, one of the things that we used to use when we were, so Frontlines across the street and with the teenagers over there and whoever else, getting them to pray. And, you know, asking people to pray is a hard thing. Sometimes even in collections of adults, there'll be people that just aren't comfortable to pray out loud. And by the way, Marcus, who was standing up here a minute ago, if you need someone to pray with, that man can pray. So we would pray over at Frontlines, but the way we did it was this. We would have something that we called gratitude circles. So that way people would sit in a circle and we'd say, okay, time for gratitude circle. They didn't have to close their eyes. They didn't have to think of something really lofty. They just had to say something they were thankful for. You know, if we set our sights on just noticing something that we're thankful for, and I mean really thankful for, not like something that, you know, about our treasures and if moths and rust and that can get to it, then it's not a real treasure. Not a thank you for something like that, but a thank you like, here's one I had from this week. And I have three I'm going to share. So one is my husband back there, Rob, who is, since he came back from his missions, when he went on the missions trip with the group, and we always joke that he's still in Bolivia bliss for the most part. He had such an experience there that it really changed him, and it's been amazing. The other night we're different in very many ways, Rob and I. Like, he likes to drive. I drive because I have to drive. He also likes to drive. He would prefer to drive than to walk. If I can walk, I always prefer to walk. We've had dogs for a long time, and part of the reason we got the dogs was because I thought, you know, then we'll walk the dog, you know, get it, honey? We'll walk the dog. Well, that kind of fell through, and it's usually me that walks the dog. He plays with the dog and gets her all worked up, and then I take her for a walk. That's it. But the other night, we had a deacon's meeting, and I said, honey, let's walk. And without very much effort, he just said, okay. We walked. And it's a small thing. So it's going to sound like a very small thing. It was a huge thing for us to experience. And that's the point about the experience of love and the experience of God. What is your experience of God? May not really register with another person, but it is so important to notice it. And it's actually a really good thing to name it as well. Another thing, if you if I needed another reason to love my husband, and I don't, because I love him like bigger than the sanctuary. If I needed another reason to love him, this is it. When we talked, because I was sort of running ideas past him on this passage, because honestly, a couple times I was thinking, I'm just going to do a psalm. They're so much easier, and it's all sort of, I was just tired of what seemed to me like a this kind of a story, and it was bugging me. Anyway, so we were talking about it, and Rob said, well, all I can say is the Samaritan was made well, but he said, I'm not giving up on the other nine, because I think at some point, they're going to come to their own place, and they meet, and they see who Jesus is. They know him, and so they're going to do the right thing too. And I love about him, about my husband, that he sees that possibility. I really wasn't even thinking about that, but that's him. That's like mercy, right? That's not ready to damn the nine because they didn't do what the one who did it right did. That's his mercy. And then there was one other thing, which is a little bit, it doesn't so much directly relate to this story per se, but I work with a woman who's Jewish. We've known each other for a very long time, and she's very kind. And so she was asking me earlier, what was I doing on the long weekend? And I said, oh, you know, Thanksgiving, family's coming over. And then I told her that I was preaching today. By the way, where's Glenda? Is Glenda here? Glenda. I was going to mention to you at the beginning, Glenda told me when she heard I was preaching today that I wasn't allowed to preach, that I should just talk to you. So I was going to warn her up front. anyway, so my friend Karen, we're talking, and I said, yeah, I'm preaching, and this is the passage that I'm doing. And, you know, because it's a New Testament passage, I realized she wouldn't know it. But she was curious, so she said, so what are you speaking on? And I said, well, it's the story of the 10 lepers. And then, you know, do you know that one? She said, nope. So I told it to her. She was very interested, and at the end, she's very thoughtful, and she's actually a very godly woman. She is a devout Jew, but she is the way that she handles herself, she really lives her faith. It's beautiful and always inspiring, and I feel privileged to work beside her. Anyway, she said, but I do want to mention to you, she said, do you think there's any significance in the number, in the 10? And I said, you know, 1, 90%, 10, I don't know, you know, that's kind of where I'd been going with one of the authors that I was reading. But she said, no, the number 10 in Judaism is a minion, so not M-I-N-I-O-N, like the little yellow guys with a single I, but minyan, M-I-N-Y-A-N, which is a group of 10. And in Judaism, there must be 10 praying men, in order for them to have fellowship and to have prayer together. And after she said that, I mean, at first I was trying to see how it might apply to the leper thing, but then, you know, I just woke up one morning and I was thinking about the place, you know, we all know and we could all sort of finish the verse where two or more are gathered. And the thing is, thinking about it, was this even a little bit what was in Jesus' mind? Because 10, the number 10, if you need 10 people to pray, then Jesus kind of set us free from needing to have a prescribed number before it was really called worship, or before it's worship that really counts. So that gift from a friend that I work with, that really, you know, it didn't relate specifically to what I was saying, I could see the hand of God in it. So that's what we need to, as we leave, we're already grateful. We're on a roll because it's Thanksgiving and it's a beautiful day, and maybe some people are eating turkey or hoping for turkey or whatever, but for what we need to take away, or what would be a good thing for us in going forward, is to think about the gratitude, to think about the points that we can be grateful for, to practice that in such a way that we open ourselves to the experience of wonder, that we allow ourselves to recognize and to really experience God, that we don't tame him, that we don't put him in a box and say he just does certain things, but that we really allow him to fill our lives. I love the song that we were singing. It is his breath in our lungs, and we pour out our praise to him. That's really it. That's really it. Everything that we have is a gift that comes from him. And so it's not forgetting that gift, and it's not forgetting where it came from. No matter how absorbed we might become and distracted we might become by the gifts, by the things that are given to us, that at some point in the day we do come to our senses, we slow down, and we really think about what's happened and what we've received in the day, so that we can connect the dots and recognize that every good and perfect gift comes from our Father in heaven. Happy Thanksgiving.